Our next panel is Force Majeure and Naseby's. Our speaker is Craig Enochs. He's a partner of Reed Smith in the Houston office. His practice focuses on energy commodities with special emphasis on natural gas and electricity. Craig assists clients in both retail and wholesale transactions in the purchase, sale, hedging, finance, and transportation of commodities. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks, everyone. All right. We need to load the slides, I guess. Do I keep going forward? Keep going forward? I can keep advancing. You want me to just do that? There we go. All right. So thank you, everybody, for being here this morning. It's always great being at these events. It's almost like summer camp where you get to see people once a year and say hello and try to catch up on everything that's happened the last year. My session will be quick. It's only 30 minutes, and we're going to be talking about force majeure under the NASBE, which is a really interesting topic because I think the NASBE hasn't changed in a long time, right? The 2006 version is the new version that we have out there. My kids are barely older than the NASBE, and yet I think the last few years we've seen some really amazing developments, both in terms of commercial impacts of the NASBE and legal interpretations. A lot of case law, a lot of activism, and so we're going to talk about a little bit of that today. I think the first thing that's helpful is just to do a refresher on force majeure, just to go over where it comes from and what New York law especially looks at. I was going to look at Texas law, but that would have been in the 45-minute version of this presentation, so we're doing New York law only today. And we're then going to look at what the NASBE says about force majeure and then some case law. And I tried to really heavily weight this toward the cases because I think that's the most important part of this. Talking about force majeure, though, where did it come from? And U.S. law really points to one case as being the genesis of the U.S. recognition of force majeure. In law school, everybody learns about the cases in the 1400s that in English law gave root to force majeure doctrine. But our U.S. cases point to an English case, Taylor versus Caldwell. It's funny to me that it was a music hall. Evidently, entertainment venues were as unreliable then in the 1860s as they are today. But this was a holding where the court said that since the hall burned down, the lessor did not have to perform due to force majeure. Now, it was not strictly a force majeure analysis. When you look at it, it was closer to impossibility or frustration of purpose, which are different outside the scope of today. But suffice it to say, while it was a building block, it was not technically a force majeure case. But when you look at New York law in general, the Kelkim Corp case is really the one that everybody points to is kind of laying out New York force majeure law. And the bottom line is, or the thesis is, that there was an extraordinary event that prevents performance. And it's interesting to me, when you look at the case law, the courts are really looking for that extraordinary event. It has to be something that's really unusual. And we'll look at the cases that come later, why that's important. But the event must be out of the claiming party's control and not due to their negligence. What's interesting is that's in New York law. A lot of times you see that built into the force majeure provisions, not technically necessary under New York law because that's already required. And what's also interesting is under New York law, they're very specific that impracticality is not enough and economic difficulty is not enough. It's too bad that it costs you more to perform, but that does not equate to force majeure. And the cases are really consistent on that point. And what's really interesting is that really until the 19th century, the 1800s, and late in the 1800s, even impossibility wasn't a defense. It was really relatively late that force majeure arose as a doctrine that was a defense to performance. So I think as a result of that, the New York courts have always tried to construe force majeure clauses narrowly. In fact, they'll say that in all the opinions, everyone. In New York, we construe force majeure narrowly. What does that mean? Well, of course, then it's up to the court. But what's really important is this next part of that bullet, where they say that they're confined to things of the same kind or nature as those specifically set forth in the clause. And the quote from the case is that The general words are not to be given expansive meaning.